Hi, welcome to Thomas Anonymous. Today's show, we have Chapter 11, Toxic Gayness, followed immediately by the Weed Cap. Buckle up, it's going to be a truthful ride. My name is Tommy Natoli, and this is Thomas Anonymous. Chapter 11, Toxic Gayness. When people find out I'm originally from the Boston area, they always say, "Why don't you have one of those accents?" And the truth is, I had to get rid of my accent because people didn't think I was from Boston. They thought I was handicapped. Fun fact, Boston's official city slogan is, "Go fuck your mother!" Just kidding, I made that part up. But seriously, go fuck your mom. Growing up, my mom had three kids with three different men, which kinda makes her ambitious. But my dad had six kids with five different women, which makes him, well, a man. If you do the math with my dad, six kids with five women, that means one lucky lady was dumb enough to stick around for round two. Some may call that luck. Others may call that a learning disability. It's your call to make. Despite my mom having three baby daddies, I never had to witness a long, drawn-out breakup. My mom was very much a leave-a-note-on-the-kitchen-table kind of gal. "Dear Mike, lasagna's in the fridge. Also, I moved out." I wish I could say I was inspired by my mother's strength, but unfortunately, that is not the case. Bless my mom's heart, but she was a coward in the face of adversity and fell for everything because she stood for nothing. Ha ha! When I was a kid, I thought that I had invented reincarnation. Oh yeah, I thought I came up with the theory all by myself, and it was my big idea. And I told my mom, "Mom, oh my god, I think I just invented something. Imagine when somebody dies, they get to come back to life, but as somebody new." And she looked at me and she said, "You didn't invent that, and it's not true." Mom's great. She really knows how to lift people up. My mom didn't support the idea of college. As a kid, I wanted to go to college so bad. I was going to major in theater, and I was going to live in the dorms. I had it all planned out. But she said to me, "No, you got to go to trade school. Learn a skill, Tommy. You're not college material." Yeah, well, you're not really mom material. Nobody seems to be stopping you. I will always love my mother, because most hostages grow to love their abductors. My middle name is Stockholm. Jokes, 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 jokes. The truth is, my mom was with so many losers, by the time I was 12, I said, "Mom, can we just find a nice used car salesman? They're having a sale down at Kia. Let's just go check out the staff." What I'm trying to say here is that my childhood was pretty dysfunctional to the point that I used to wish and hope and pray that one day I could just be whisked away by Michael Jackson. And that is true. My number one childhood fantasy was that I would be kidnapped by the King of Pop.
Shannon!
Ow! I was about 10, and I knew I was his demographic, and I was in my prime.
Me!
And I used to pray out loud on my little bed, "Please, God, let Michael Jackson take me. I don't care about the abuse. I'm experienced. Shh, I won't tell anyone." Cause hey, if you're gonna have a messed up childhood, it might as well be happening at the Neverland Ranch with a Ferris wheel and a millionaire. I was 10, I wasn't stupid. At this point, it is a known fact that when I was a boy, I was super femmy. Kids in school would come up to me and always say, "Are you a boy or a girl?" And then I would say something sassy back like, "Hello, my sweatshirt says bugle boy." And then I'd snap my fingers. I was a very sassy kid who was desperate for attention, but I soon found out the kind of attention that comes to a little boy snapping his fingers and wiggling his neck. Newsflash, it's not the kind of attention you want. I was funny, I was cute, and I had great hair every day. I'm not joking, my hair was fucking awesome. I used a truckload of LA Looks hair gel to turn the front of my hair into a cresting wave, while the sides of my hair were shellacked back. I knew that I was different from the other kids, but whatever, I had amazing hair. At least my differentness was amusing to the other kids. That was my shield and armor to keep them from making fun of me. For the most part, my girliness would make them laugh so much that they wouldn't get a chance to ask me uncomfortable questions. Now, I'm about to say something super controversial. I hate the term bullied. And I know we live in a super sensitive world where bullying is indeed a valid problem, but to be fair and balanced, there are some out there that use the word bully as a crutch. It can sometimes be an overused word that I feel has, God, how do I say this in a sensitive way, created a pussy safety net for people to hide under and make excuses for not taking action. Truth! I was not brutally bullied, so I don't know and I can't speak for what that experience is like. I would say that I was occasionally put on the spot, either at school or sometimes at something like a birthday party or a sleepover, and they would always say the same thing. "So what's up with that girly voice of yours?" Or, "You act like a girl." Or the one that I really grew to hate the absolute most. "Are you gay?
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 Gay? The Are You Gay one is the worst because it's so bluntly to the point it's ridiculous. That, to me, is just so not in the normal world of conversational questions. You just don't randomly ask that to people. Normal shit is, hey, what's your name? What's your favorite color? What channel is Law & Order on? What time does the bus get here? Are you gay? Yeah, that one just sticks out for some reason. I never felt bullied. I felt mostly bothered and annoyed and like I was surrounded by idiotic low IQ dingbats. Kids were mean to me, sure, but most of the time I was mean right back to them. So those awkward moments at sleepovers when I'd get called out for being femme. Why do you talk like a girl? I'd usually say something back in my girly voice like, hey, are you guys still on welfare? Or is your sister's hooker money keeping the family going? Oh, she's pregnant, right?
And there certainly were some mean kids I would come across and they would definitely go for it and shoot off the classic hits like, faggot.
Fag. Gay. Gaylord. Sissy. Gay.
Gay.
You're gay.
Gay, 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 gay.
Gay, 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 gay.
Gay.
But those people, the mean kids, they were so outnumbered by laughing people that even though it sucked hearing those words, it was kind of like, whatever, dude, I have great hair and a fan club of girls. Get out of here.
Me, me, me.
And I'm really lucky and fortunate that it was only sometimes people would say these things to me. For the most part, my entertaining sassiness I served up was enough to get a laugh and move the focus away from the G word. In my experience, as a kid growing up in straight macho man America, it was clear to me that boys should walk, talk, and act a certain way. And if you didn't, then you're a fag. Plain and simple. I knew that I was girly and I was terrified of confrontation, so I studied. I knew that I wanted to be an entertainer when I grew up, so I took on my first role as a straight, normal boy. For years, I studied boys and I studied men. How they walked, how they talked, how they acted, how they ate, how they stood, how they laughed, how they reacted, everything. I would mimic their every move, and slowly but surely, I started to be able to act like a guy when I needed to. Some things, though, like my voice, was totally out of my control. So I started smoking cigarettes at 13 because I wanted to deepen my voice and butch it up. I used to try and make noises as deep as I could with my voice in the hopes of it not being so girly. One of the things I used to hate people saying after I finally did come out of the closet was,
wow, you don't act like a gay person.
Or,
it's really cool because you're masculine and not super femmy.
I don't act super gay most of the time, not because I'm butch or naturally masculine, but because of years of training to restrain myself. I was raised in a prejudiced, narrow-minded place where if you acted gay, chances are you'd get murdered. I had to train myself not to be myself. So that person saying, you don't act gay, thought they were complimenting me when really they were just endorsing my years of masochism and pathetic complicity.
Aw, thanks!
I took on a persona of what I thought would fly for a straight guy. My whole entire existence was making people think something that wasn't true, and also trying so hard and so desperate not to end up actually being gay. Does it sound exhausting? 'Cause it was. I heard a gay guy once say that he was happy that his dad pushed and forced him to be masculine. And I thought to myself, first of all, you don't need a dad to do that. Society does a great job of that by itself. And second of all, it was interesting to me that this gay guy was satisfied that somebody was there to push onto him traits and behaviors that he maybe otherwise would not have. I am fascinated by the amount of toxic masculinity within the gay community itself. People don't talk about that, and they need to. The corroded seeds of hate towards feminine men that leak over into our adulthood is insanely crazy. But more on that fun LGBT issue later. Long story short, we all learn very young not to act like a sissy or else you'll get made fun of. Or your ass kicked. Or both. I suppose every generation has their cross to bear. Or at least we all think we do. I'm still trying to figure out which generation I belong to. Google just told me that I am the oldest of the millennial generation. Oh, great. Whatever. Older millennials like myself are mostly children of baby boomers, and we all had an analog childhood and a digital adolescence. The generation before me had to fight for the right to not get lynched in the streets for being gay. I love that today in West Hollywood, at any time, you can find guys kissing and holding hands walking down the street, and even occasionally, we'll get a 20-year-old twink sashaying down Santa Monica Boulevard in a glitter thong and pink nipple pasties.
Hi!
But that is a freedom that was not just handed over with ease. People fought and died, and not as an enlisted officer in a military battle. These people fought and died on their own streets, standing up for who they were. and refusing to hide in the shadows. If you are gay and listening to this and you don't know what Stonewall is, turn this amazing podcast off, Google Stonewall, and fucking learn something before you head out to frolic around town with cocktails. People say freedom isn't free. Yeah, well, frolicking isn't free either, so hashtag educate yourself.
Fuck.
There was a violence against gays that, fingers crossed, I hopefully will never have to experience. Police brutality was a nightly occurrence, surprise, surprise, and if you were caught being or doing anything gay, you would get arrested or beaten or who knows.
Yay, history!
Gays and lesbians fought for the LGBT community before there was a legit LGBT community. Yeah, turns out there wasn't always a gay center downtown to get HIV tested at. There was a time when there were no gay neighborhoods, and people had to live in absolute secrecy. When I was a young kid, homosexuality was kept a secret from me because I was being raised by a Christian lunatic baby boomer. The ideals and morals around me came straight out of the 1950s and came straight for me. No straight pun intended. From what I was absorbing from the world around me in the late 80s and early 90s was that if you were a gay man, that meant you definitely had AIDS. Which, by the way, was ignored for almost a decade while millions of gay men died and amazing lesbians took care of them. Seriously, people wouldn't touch them, people wouldn't help them, ambulances would not pick them up, hospitals turned them away for fear of contracting the illness. I mean, it was such a wonderful world I was born into.
Way to blow it, America.
My super fun and amazing Uncle Michael was gay and died of AIDS around 1992. This was such a taboo subject at the time that my mother didn't even tell me he had AIDS until after he had died. She was tucking me into bed one night. Uncle Michael died 2 weeks ago. He had AIDS. Good night.
Okay, sweet dreams. Copy that.
I'm surprised that she didn't just leave me a note on the kitchen table.
Uncle Mike is dead. AIDS. Cereal on the counter.
I was scared of being gay, not just because of the queer, scarlet letter social stigma, but because I was convinced that being gay meant a certain death sentence. When I realized around the age of 12 that the thoughts I was having were in fact gay, that was horrifying. The HIV virus was a major constant fear of mine, circling my brain every day. I thought to myself, oh my god, I'm gonna get AIDS, which quickly turned into, oh my god, I definitely already have AIDS. Remember the condom I found on the street and jerked off with for a month?
Me.
Yeah, well, I was convinced for 3 years after that that I'd gotten AIDS from it. And this wasn't just a fleeting thought. No, this was a constant, everyday fear that I totally had HIV because I used a condom off the street and I thought of naked boys. And I kept telling myself that my gay thoughts would go away and I soon would really like girls. Yeah, it just hasn't kicked in yet fully. Yeah, that's it. It's just like a cold. Just gotta give it some time, right? I tried to pray the gay away before I knew that was a thing. I'm a trailblazer and I didn't even know it. I used to force myself to think of girls while I masturbated, thinking that I was helping my brain reprogram itself to where it was supposed to be. I convinced myself that these gay thoughts and feelings were just a symptom of Diddler Bob. Oh, Diddler Bob was one of my mom's husbands who was also a pedophile. I know, she either has horrible taste in men or no intuition, or both. I also thought, when it came to my gay thoughts, that maybe I just had a chemical imbalance that was causing it. I convinced myself that I just wasn't born with the right hormones, and I hoped that I could get an injection that would just fix me. Fix me. I convinced myself a million and one different ways as to why I was feeling wasn't true. The toxic masculinity that runs rampant through our culture ran right through me. I tangled with denial for years, dancing to the brainwashing beats of society. The fight for basic civil rights and equality is still going strong. I doubt it will be won or end in my lifetime the way things are going, but at least we can walk down the street holding hands without getting killed. Of course, that mostly still depends on geography. Sure, we've come a long way, but we are still pretty much contained to metropolitan areas. Gayborhoods where we can feel safe to have families and feel safe to be who we are, and all that great stuff that every other American just gets. I would not feel safe holding hands with a guy in Southeast Texas, so yeah, we've definitely made progress, but it's all within a bubble.
Baby steps.
I first came out of the closet when I was 17 years old. It was maybe for 3 months, and then I turned around and went right back in the closet.
Me!
For me, it was a combination of not being ready and also realizing what that really meant for my life. Coming out as gay is a commitment. It's a lifelong commitment to labels, judgment, hate, harassment, all kinds of great stuff. My 3 months out of the closet, I had a summer love. Eric the Bank Teller. Eric the Bank Teller was my first boyfriend and first D in my mouth that didn't belong to one of my mom's husbands. We went on dates to the movies, made out in the car, all the great classic teenager shit. Then, one night, the cops busted us making out in the Wareham Walmart parking lot. And I'm talking passionate making out the only way gross teenagers can do it. And nothing nasty was happening. I mean, this was classic American Pie type shit. Alright, we did grope and dry hump a little, so I guess it's the gay spin on the American Pie. But when you're 17 years old and you are knee-deep in a hormonal existence, you get caught up in these moments. I mean, I didn't even notice that the cops pulled up and got out of their cars, but sure enough, one walked right up to the car and yelled at us.
Cut that out and get out of the car now!
At first I thought it was Eric the Bank Teller's dad busting him. And then I realized it was the cops. Like, the police? Really? There are dozens of losers out back of Walmart right now smoking crack, and yet the cops are out here shining their lights on me because I'm making out with a guy? The officer who made us get out of my car was big, ugly, and a total asshole. I guess it turns out Fat Matt really could have made it as a cop after all. Officer Mean Fat Face said that he didn't want that gay shit going on in his town. Not in his town. This town isn't the place for that gay stuff. I wish someone could have told him that his town, this Pleasantville picture he was painting, is one of the shittiest drug-riddled towns in Southeast Mass. So just slow your fucking roll, dude. I'm sure there are like a dozen kids shoplifting at Walmart right now. Why don't you go be productive and deal with them? It was a shitty moment. It sucked. It felt beyond embarrassing for me, and it felt like I was wrong and that I was a mutant. I felt like a personal moment was just super violated, followed by some old-fashioned berating.
Whee!
And the part that killed me was that it was for no reason at all. No crimes were being committed. We were just existing. It was a horrible, horrible feeling that I really can't even articulate. I wanted to curl up and make myself the size of a microscopic spider living in a dust ball. Officer Mean Fat Face made us stand by the car and kept flashing his light directly in my retina, burning it so that I was blinded and could only hear his fat voice.
Not in my town. Now get out of here. You're lucky I don't call your parents.
Tell my parents? Oh, you mean Mom and Fat Matt? Look, dude, I used to answer the door for the pizza delivery guy in heels and pink lipstick, so if they need to be told, then shame on them for being idiots. After we were released from being harassed, I went home and I thought long and hard. I thought about that experience. I thought about how I should stand up and be proud of who I am. And I came to the conclusion of, fuck that! The very next day, I decided, yep, I'm straight. And I got a girlfriend, ASAP. Sorry, Eric the Bank Teller. You're getting ghosted! Hey, Cheryl, get over here. You're my girlfriend now, and we are busy! What? You have a baby? Yeah, big deal. I don't care. It's opening night, and I need someone to play my girlfriend. So guess what? I love you. What? I should move in with you? Okay, great. More on all that later. My gay run-in with the law was not a hashtag gay lives matter situation. I am in no way trying to set that tone. It just really showed me how shitty people were and how horrible the world really was. My experience growing up and coming of age at the time that I did, there was nothing positive about gay people happening in mainstream stuff that I watched. There were no gay shows like Glee with queer teens and musical numbers. There was no Willing Grace. Shit, not even Ellen was out as gay. As television raised me, there were only two kinds of gay guys on it. The makeup-wearing Femi sidekick and the dying AIDS patient. Neither of which I was interested in playing. Although I think if I really applied myself, I could have been a great Femi sidekick. But no eyeshadow, just like a nice foundation and some good eyeliner. Me. As the 90s came towards its Y2K end and I entered young adulthood, celebrities finally started to come out as gay. Ellen was, of course, the first big one I remember, but what I also remember and what people don't talk about was how badly she was treated. We didn't see Ellen for like 5 or 6 years because it took America a while to get over itself. Towards the end of high school, being an out-of-the-closet homo was not a completely radical idea. I mean, my high school even had a gay-straight alliance group, and I'm pretty sure I joined it 1 year, but I only went on the day they did pictures for yearbooks. Duh. On the surface, things seemed like they were moving in a positive, progressive direction, and they were, but it just felt like it was at a snail's pace. Despite famous people coming out of the closet, on the streets of small-town America, there was still so much hate and judgment and hate that people still desperately feared what they didn't understand. Unfortunately, even once you come out of the closet, you are met with even more hate and judgment from the very community you just joined up with. Gay men are, in my experience, not the warmest, most accepting groups of people. You are judged ferociously on your age, body type, weight, teeth, hairline, age, body, age, body, age, body, and salary. Toxic masculinity doesn't magically go away when you come out of the closet. It's totally present in the gay community, with gay men only wanting manly acting men and shaming those who have feminine qualities. Of course, not every gay guy is going to be attracted to each other, just like not all straight people are attracted to each other. But a lot of gay guys are dragging in the old ideas and judgments that were planted in all of our minds. It is still in all of us, and it's up to us to notice it, acknowledge it, have a conversation about it so that we can fix it. In the gay community, there is so much hate and shame directed towards feminine gay guys. Go on a gay dating app and you will see an insane amount of no femmes, mask for mask only, man for man, straight acting only. Straight acting only? Does anyone else think this is super fucked up? What the fuck is straight acting, and why, as a gay man, do you want me to act straight? Do you need your oil changed, or do you just want me to act butch as I suck your dick? What is going on? It seems to me like a lot of daddy issues are floating around out there in gay land. Straight acting or not, one or both of us is getting a dick in the ass, so shut the fuck up and get over it. Sure, we all have our taste in what turns us on and what doesn't, but it's beyond that. This is gay guys shaming other gay guys for basically being gay. What? Yeah, I know, and we need to get our shit together, otherwise our progressive journey upward and forward will be stalled out and slowed down. That fire that was lit years ago by the generation before us will burn out. So get the fuck over it, gay guys. Some of us are femmy, some of us are fat. Yeah, turns out we're human. It can be so liberating to come out and be in a gay-friendly community where you can openly and freely be who you are, hold hands with a guy, or spend 3 hours drunk at Fiesta Cantina making out with a stranger like a crazy person. Me? But to be quite honest, how liberating is it when most gay men you come across are super judgmental cunts? And I'm not generalizing here either. I am speaking from my own experience. See, I'm what is known as straight thin, gay fat. Yeah, I'm LA fat, but Ohio skinny.
You hear me barking, big dog?
I've gained over 50 pounds, which 50 pounds for a straight guy is like, eh. But 50 pounds for a gay guy is like, and now it's at the point where I don't even like to say I've gained weight. I prefer to say I've evolved into a bigger, better person. I also don't even like to call it my body anymore. Now I just refer to this as my meat sack. And if anyone else has ever evolved, you know about the wake-up call day. That's the day that you realize, holy shit, I've evolved 50 fucking pounds. For me, that day, I was out and about at a bar, and I saw an old friend I used to do comedy with. I went up to her, and I was like, oh, hey, how's it going? She had no idea who I was. And that just really shows you how bad Los Angeles is, when only 50 pounds makes you
unrecognizable.
And unrecognizable is the worst, because then you have to tell your friend who you are. I was like, hey, it's me, Tommy Natoli. She was like, oh, hi, it must be the hat. I wasn't wearing a fucking hat. Nope, live and learn, I guess. One thing that really drives me crazy is when super skinny, healthy people talk about their cheat day. They're like, cheeseburger and french fries, cheat day. And I'm like, cheeseburger and french fries, every day. For all of you cheat day people out there, relax. We get it. You're super duper healthy every day of the week, except Thursdays. And I hate it because cheat day people say things like, this chocolate cake is so good. I can't wait to burn it off at CrossFit. And I'm sorry, I just think that is super disrespectful to the chocolate cake. I'm not like that when I eat cake. I'm very hospitable. I let that cake know you can stay inside of me as long as you want. This isn't a stomach. This is a welcome mat. I just don't think you should rub your cheat day in all of our faces. You get a fabulous cheat day, and that's not fair because not everybody gets to have a cheat day. Like, they don't have cheat day down at the methadone clinic. Married people don't get cheat day, although that would be some shit I want to hear. I just think that would be a great excuse to hear from someone getting caught cheating.
What? Honey, no, no, honey, it's my cheat day. You had cheeseburger and french fries. I had the neighbor's wife. What?
That's my straight guy impression.
What? Come on.
And no offense to straight guys, I love straight guys because all you really have to do to fit in with straight guys is deepen your voice and act like an idiot.
I wish that for the next big political sex scandal, which probably already happened since I started this chapter, I hope for that sex scandal that they just admit to us that they did it and then use cheat day as their excuse.
America, I did have sex with that young woman, but it was my cheat day. Saturdays are my special day to stuff my face with pizza and pussy.
Or to be fair and balanced, if you're a Republican, caviar and cock. You did it, yay! Thanks for listening to Chapter 11, Toxic Gayness. Join me now for The Weed Cap, a post-chapter chat where I chill out, answer questions, and hang out with various awesome people. The Weed Cap is up next. Alright everyone, welcome to The Weed Cap. I'm Tommy Natoli here in fiery Los Angeles, and I have a fantastic show for you today. We're going to talk all about Chapter 11, Toxic Gayness. And after my chat with Michelle with 1L, I'm going to read some messages and answer some questions sent in by listeners. Yay! For those of you that don't know, the beautiful state of California is on fire, and Los Angeles is covered in smoke. So today, as I was driving to Michelle with 1L's house to record the Weed Cap, because it's my turn to drive, and all of a sudden my drive turned into an apocalyptic nightmare with smoke and raining ash, and since I'm a total baby, I turned around and went home. Me. But have no fear, my co-host with the best hair in podcasting will be here. Well, not technically here. We had to rough it like it was the 80s and talk on the phone for this episode, but we literally talk on the phone every day, so it wasn't much of a stretch for us. We were both in our cars trying to filter clean air into our lungs while we do what everyone in LA does, sit in traffic.
I mean, if I look in front of me, there's smoke. If I look behind me, there's smoke. If I look to the left, there's smoke. There's smoke everywhere. And so nobody can move. And so, you know, that was my first thought was, hey, if I don't have any electricity, I'm going to go shopping. And then I couldn't get home. And so everybody's being detoured. So everybody thought, screw it. And there's a bunch of people at Chick-fil-A. I should go tell all of them to turn around. But anyway, so here I am.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think the most important question right now is, how is your hair doing? What's going on with that?
Oh, my God. I got a new hairdo, and it looks amazing. But this wind has just wreaked havoc on it. So that's okay. I didn't even put on lipstick when I left the house today because, I don't know, everybody's house is burning down. Why bother?
Yeah, you're roughing it.
I am roughing it. I'm roughing it. It's cold. It's windy. My fence blew down. Parts of my roof are flying off.
Oh my God.
What a great day.
Well, I bit the inside of my mouth twice yesterday and once this morning. So who has it worse? Me.
I know. You have it way worse than these people whose houses are burning down. You are just, you win.
I did it again this morning.
I do not know how you can take any situation and make it about yourself, but it's a gift.
It's a gift and a challenge. All right.
But what's the real deal is the podcast this week. Now, I know that every week I say the same thing. You go, oh, my God, this is my favorite. Oh, my God. But this honestly was my favorite, and I'm going to tell you why.
Aww.
It made me feel every single emotion. It made me angry. It made me sad. It made me happy, and then I laughed, and then I wanted to punch your mom in the face, and I don't know. It just was, and it really was, you know, it hit home for me because of my little gay, you know, what he's had to go through. So it was a tough one. It made me sad.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And no. And it also, you know, let me just say too, I love your sound effects that you do. Gay.
Thank you. I love that. And I love that you connected to it. And honestly, this is a longer chapter. And when I think about it, because I listened to it this morning, because I'm not as narcissistic as I thought, because I forgot a lot of what was going on. So I made notes of like the whole thing. But basically, like, I really feel like this is kind of like the core of what I mean with the whole Thomas Anonymous,
I agree.
This is like the foundation of where I'm coming from. You know, this whole thing is like where I'm coming from, my point of view, and this is kind of like the bedrock of it, you know?
Well, it really is. It really is. I mean, you could write a whole slew just, you know, based on this one chapter. And I was sad when it was over. I was like, oh, God, because my mother always told me when we were growing up, you know, gay people were going to hell. And I fully bought into that. And I would, you know, shame people and, you know... It just blows my mind, you know, and then, of course, the universe gave me the super gayest gay kid in the whole wide world, and I love him. And his, you know, like, I look at pictures when he was, like, 2 years old, wearing a dress and my heels. It's just who he was. And when you talk about you growing up and, you know, the things that you went through, I love the part of the pizza, you know, answering the door and the heels and the dress.
Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a hit.
I love that. Because when I met you, you were the butch guy. You weren't gay when I met you. I mean, you were gay, but you were being the other guy.
Well, yeah, that's really, it's so true and interesting. And, yeah, I was going to.
You were freaking hanging drywall, man. You were a construction worker with your dad for, like, 5 minutes. You know.
Yeah, I put one screw in the wall, and I was like, see you later, Alfredo. This is ridiculous.
But you pushed it up. You pushed it up like crazy. Nobody knew. Nobody knew.
That's what I love about us, is you got to meet that version. Because, you know, when we met, that was, like, the end of that era. Like, that, you got to watch that, like, crack away and kind of shed that skin of that.
Right. I know. It's been an amazing journey, and I'm glad that I got to be present.
What I was thinking, I thought about you this morning as I was listening, and I thought about Quentin, obviously. And what I love that Quentin got to have was that he got to have you as a mom. So I'm sure he didn't, you know, he got it from other places. I know personally that he got that kind of treatment elsewhere. But, you know, because you let him wear his ruby red slippers and his whatever, and you didn't change
his voice.
You must
be the dismay of his dad. Yeah, I remember, because his dad freaked out. Don't let him do that.
Did he freak out to you or to Quentin?
To me. Oh, no. He would never. He was always very, very loving to Quentin, and even when Quentin did come out, he was fine. But he would freak out to me. That was going to make him gay. If you let him play with the Barbies, or you let him wear those shoes, or, you know, that's going to turn him gay.
And what was your response?
So, you don't turn people gay, because that was when I was over that part. I was like, no, we all knew. And I was, you know, I finally came to my senses, you know, when I dumped that whole philosophy of, you know, hell and, you know, all that other crap. You know, I just had to embrace Quentin for who he was, because there was nothing I could do. I could send him to every conversion camp that Mike Pence knows, and it still wouldn't make a difference, you know?
I know. Well, who knew that? Who would have thought that I was actually the trailblazer of conversion gay therapy?
Right? I know, praying away. Oh, my God, I know. It's such a different time now, but, you know, Quentin did get bullied. I mean, they peed in his locker.
Yeah.
In high school, he got, when we lived in the mountains, he got chased down the street, and they threw rocks at him and yelled at him, you should kill yourself.
I know.
It was
and
terrible.
That's why I really tried to make a disclaimer in here that, like, I didn't have, I was lucky, very lucky I did not have that experience, because, you know, I would just tap dance my way out of the situation.
Yeah, see, that's why you're so brilliant, is because you were able to use humor. Quentin wasn't. Quentin took all of that and just, you know, buried himself in self-pity and all of that, which makes me a piece of shit for always going, get over it. I mean, I called the cops, I did what I was supposed to do, you know, but at the same time, you know, come on, be clever, you know? I mean, that's what you did.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And as much as I hate to give him the credit, you know, it is very full circle. Like, I feel like I got a lot of that, you know, insult thing from Fat Matt, you know? He was a dick, and, like, I learned from him. So when people were assholes to me, it's like, oh, you don't understand. Like, I have an asshole at home that's, like, taught me how to be a dick right back to you. So I feel like everything helped each other in a weird way.
Yeah, definitely. So that's sad that Quentin didn't have that. He didn't have any, you know, way. But at the same time, Quentin has never compromised his gayness by trying to be butch. Not in a million.
Right. And that's what I think is great. And that's what I love. Like, Quentin's a younger millennial. And I was trying to, like, really kind of talk to his age people in that part of the chapter where I'm talking about, like, it's great that you guys can do all that now, but just please know, like, why you're able to do all that now. Like, you know, it's not like everything's always changing, which is great. You know, things aren't like they were in the early 90s, just like they weren't in the early 90s the way they were in the 60s. But, like, I want everyone to know know, like, how and why we're able to do the crazy gay things we're able to do.
Right, but and still, like you said, only in certain pockets of the world are you able to do that, because you did that in Russia, you'd be dead.
Oh, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah. You know, I never want to go
that,
back.
Even... So I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. So we are very, very fortunate. But at the same time, like you said, you know, even in the, that's the other thing that I loved that you brought up, was how even in the gay community, there's so much prejudice.
Oh, my God. That was, you know, that's an aha light bulb moment for sure. I mean, and I think if any gay guy is really being honest with themselves, they will totally know what I'm talking about.
Well, yeah, Quentin recognizes it because he gets it all the time because he's super femme.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, I wish we could talk to him because I'm sure he could tell us, all about it, how, you know, they are. They are just so, I don't know, hateful towards feminine gay guys. And it's like...
I wonder why. Why?
Because it's what we're all taught, you know, and it's baggage you bring with you, and you don't even realize you're bringing it with you. Look, I used to, I'm just as bad as everyone else, because I was on that way of thinking as well. Like, when I first came out, you know, it's easier to come out, and, you know, when people would say those things, like, oh, but you don't act gay, like, I liked that at first, because I felt like I was able to come out and be gay without being put in, like, gay box. Like, oh, yeah, I'm gay, but I'm not, like, gay. I'm, like, cool gay, you guys. I was. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, maybe every gay guy goes through that, but for me, it was definitely a crutch. I feel like I was on that, like, toxic gay, toxic masculinity side of things, of, you know, of still presenting that, like, you know, I'm like a guy. Like the version of me that you met. You know, because when you met me, yeah. I was, quote, bi. I was, like, pansexual. I was comfortable with saying I played in both pawns.
There was nothing, there wasn't even pan when, before then. I never even heard that word.
There's a lot you haven't heard, okay?
I know, obviously. But, you know, I am even guilty, like when Quentin would say, people treat me bad and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, maybe you shouldn't wear short shorts to the market.
Yeah,
why should I have to change? Why should I have to change? And I, you know, it's like, I don't... I don't want your sister wearing short shorts to the market.
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, he is a spectacle to behold. Everybody knows. When he walks in a room, by golly, you know.
Well, and, you know, as a person who's getting a call right now.
I am. It's Kiara. I'll decline it.
Decline.
Okay. I declined. She's going to call me back, too.
I need chapstick.
I'm so sick of all those sexuals. I'm
I know,
not trying to be a
I
jerk.
Know.
It's just, you just, you know, it's hard. Okay. Let's talk then for a minute about the new, oh my God, the Apple commercial, I think, with the little kid.
Okay.
And the lady comes out and says, what are you doing on your computer? And the kid goes, what's a computer? Have you seen that commercial?
Mm-mm, no, I have not. What's a computer?
You can't, because he's on his iPad.
Right.
So he's like, what's a computer? But you can't tell if it's a boy or a girl. And the kid's nails are painted. So at first you think it's a boy, and then you're like, wait, his nails are painted. Is it a girl?
Mm.
But it just does, so you have to, you should probably, like, look it up so you can watch it and know what I'm talking about. But just the way that now the media has, or whoever, I don't know if the media is the right word, but, you know, society's like, no, we accept everyone. It's okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like when they take these issues that have, it's like when they take things that have become popular or you know, issues that have come to the front of the movement, like trans people and stuff, and then they basically, like, not try to monopolize off of it, but they, I don't know.
Sure they do. Yes,
you know,
they do. It's just like, you know, you have to have your token interracial couple, you have to have your token Asian person, you have to have a couple of gays thrown in there for dirty measure, that's just,
right.
Which is fine, that's great, but it's, you know.
It's like they sensationalize it now.
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. You know, like, that little kid doesn't have any problems because he's on his iPad. You know what? If he's a dude and he goes to school and he has his nails painted, he's going to get great. They don't show the other side of it. They just show it like, oh, it's great. It's awesome. That's not the truth.
Yeah. And that also is like, that goes along with geography. That's just the same as gays in geography. You know, like, I see a lot of kids in, like, L.A. is very progressive, very liberal. I see a lot of kids, preschoolers, elementary school boys, with nail polish on, with toe polish on. Nobody gives them shit. But I can guarantee you, if that kid was up in Bakersfield Elementary, that, you know, that,
oh, he'd
that
be hanging in a tree. Yeah.
Right.
No, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I know. It's sad. It makes me really, really sad. But I am glad that Fat Matt gave you the tools to take care of those guys, because I can totally see you do it. Even now, as an adult, you're the same way.
I know. I'm a little bitch.
You really are. You are. You're a diva. But I enjoy you so much, and I am so glad I got to listen to this episode. And this will be my favorite. This is it. This is it. Because this, I don't care, gay, straight, I don't care who you are. This is something that needs to be listened to. Because like you said, get educated. Know that this is happening. Because straight people, especially straight men, lump all gay people in one giant gay bubble. There is no diversity as far as they're concerned. And, you know, the gay community has so much diversity. But I don't think that straight men, their toxic masculinity, accept that, because all of gay people to them are little fairies and, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we need to
fill Congress, Senate, all of that. All women. I think we need to do like 200 years of all women to balance it out. You know, I don't know. I feel like that would really change some things.
Oh, it would be so fabulous.
It's a whole like patriarchal. I can't say that word. It's because I bit my mouth. That whole patriarchal.
I know.
You know the word I'm trying to say. I can't say it right now.
Right.
It's that whole way of
the patriarchy.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm a feminist, so I know that word. What was it? Gay.
It was gonna be gay.
Oh my God. And now what is it?
It's toxic gayness, because as I read through the chapter, I felt like that was more of like the vibe of the whole thing. Because it's the toxic gayness of my chat. Like, go ahead.
No, do you think, because you always talk about toxic masculinity, so you think mm-hmm. that even in gay culture, gay circles, there's still those gay toxic guys?
Well, my reference to toxic gayness is the toxicness of the baggage they bring in with no femmes, no masks, no, you know, all that. I only want butch straight acting guys. That, you know, the whole toxic masculinity that they bring into the gay community. But then also for me, it was like the toxic gayness that gayness was as a kid. Like that whole, like, how gay people only had AIDS and you don't want to be gay and gay. Like gay, the word gay itself was toxic to me. Like I didn't, you know, that just seems, I just didn't want that, you know? So that, I named it that because like it's toxic in all ways for me.
It wasn't really good, but I have to say that I do think, and this is kind of scary, I'm going to go out on a limb, that we need to be more political in getting things done. We need to step up. We can't just let, you know, it does matter. Every vote matters. Everybody matters.
Yeah, I've been more politically active this year than ever in my life. I've used Twitter more this year than ever in my life.
I call Trump every day.
I do.
Do you?
I called a few weeks ago, and then I called back in June. I called for when healthcare was trying to be passed, and then I called for this past tax bill. And, you know, we live in a great progressive, whatever, blue state. And so people think, oh, it doesn't matter. They're going to vote what I want to vote anyway. It does matter. And the reason I do it is because then you're part of public record. So, you know, whether the bill fails or the bill passes or the senator, you know, votes what you want or doesn't vote what you want, you are officially on public record as saying what you wanted done. So that is literally the fucking least you could do as a person in America, you know?
Gosh, yeah. I'm going to have to start reading more of your Facebook posts, huh?
My Facebook posts are usually just the Twitter posts. I mean,
I don't know how to use Twitter.
I'm on a mission to reach out to the president every day, so that's the only reason I'm on Twitter.
Ugh, such a ball sack. Blech.
It's tough. It's super tough.
I'm excited, Tommy. This really, really was brilliant. Your writing, your timing, every single thing about that chapter was awesome. I loved it. It just was over too soon.
Such a huge compliment. Before I sent it to you, I wanted to talk to you about it so bad because I felt the same way. Like, I felt like I just really loved it. I felt like, I don't know. Doing these chapters connects me to me in a way that I didn't even know existed. And like afterwards, I'm like,
and you're saving a fortune in therapy. Yeah. No, this was really, really brilliant. And I see you progressing in this really awesome way. Yeah, you're the voice of gayness.
This morning, I got a text message. It's a straight guy. And he texted me this morning and said, hey, I heard your podcast. It's awesome. it's really cool how forthcoming you are about your experiences, as difficult as it was to go through. You recount them in a very playful but serious way that I feel makes people feel comfortable.
Spot on.
Isn't that? I love that. I was like, wow, like some straight guy like told me that. That was nice. If I can make people to a fucking story about getting blown at a rest stop in a way that makes them comfortable, fuck yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's because they can laugh.
Well,
all
thank
right,
you,
well,
Michelle with 1L,
I love
for
you.
Calling in and making it work. I love you, too.
Awesome sauce. I'll talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later. Have a great one.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. I want to thank Michelle for dealing with my obsessive controlling everything. Other normal people would probably just reschedule today, but not me. I'm like, pull over, call this number, we're doing this now! So, thank you, Michelle. So I have some listener messages here, and questions, and even an iTunes review that came in. Woohoo! Hey, I know it's super annoying to hear me ask over and over to leave a review on iTunes, but if you could be so awesome and leave a review on iTunes, that would be great. I know how many people listen to the show, and you all have not left a review, so until that happens, I'm gonna keep asking. It's just like a few clicks, and then you type some letters. It's really not that hard. Prove to me you're not stupid and leave an iTunes review. Anyway, I have a 5-star review here from CB4593. And they wrote, so good. This is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. If you need something to get through your commute to work, listen to this and then listen again. Thank you, CB4593. And another 5-star review from Panza213. They wrote, honest, unforgiving fun. Tommy's truthful and alluring journey is captivating. Oh, I fucked that up. Sorry. That's take two. Take two on Panza213. 5-star review on iTunes. Honest, unforgiving fun. Tommy's truthful and alluring journey is a captivating introspection that pulls you in and keeps you coming back for more. Wow. Thank you, Panza213. That's a great review. All of my people who write reviews are really good writers, and I just want to say, you're awesome. Keep them coming. Moving on. Okay, that was awesome. So I've pulled a couple questions that were sent to me on the show's Facebook page, at Thomas Anonymous. This first question is from Samantha on Facebook, and she wrote, also, I'm like, you know, the smoke and breathing, I don't know, my voice, the congestion, it's a struggle. Anyway, Samantha on Facebook wrote, hi, I just found the show and binged the first 8 episodes. I love it, and I love the weed cap and hearing you talk with Michelle and others about the topic. One thing that I can't tell is... Sorry, I'm fucking up everyone's thing. One thing that I can't tell is real or if I'm making it up, but the audio, it seems to sometimes cut and I don't know what you're talking about. Samantha on Facebook, thank you for listening. I need a drink. Hold on. If you can't tell, my voice is struggling right now. But, Samantha, yes, thank you for writing me on Facebook. That's a great question. What I really love is that you, Samantha, you're an observer, and I like that. You notice the little things, and so do I, so I appreciate that. Now that I have danced around the question, yes, you do hear cuts, and the best way I can describe it is that sometimes, you know, sometimes whoever is on the show with me, we usually talk some serious shit about people and we drop names and it just sometimes simply has to be cut out. And there's no pretty editing way to get around it. Well, there probably is, but since I'm a one-man band for this production, I don't have that skill. But yeah, basically, we're talking shit. So there you go, girl. And Rick wrote into the show. Next question is from Rick on Facebook, and he wrote in, hey, how come the music changed? So what I think Rick is... I'm assuming he's talking about the music in the beginning of the show changes, I don't know, in one of the episodes, it changes to something different. And basically, Rick, the story behind that is Brandon, you know, my straight guy, the straight correspondent for Thomas Anonymous, well, he likes to think that he's my executive producer, and he's always, like, giving me shit if I maybe accidentally use some copyrighted music in my thing. Which you're not supposed to do, but a lot of podcasts do. But, you know, anyway. Long story short, I changed the music so that I don't get a cease and assist. And that is the really boring answer for why the music changed. Because it's free. But thank you, Rick, for asking that question. Last question I'm going to ask, I mean, read, whatever, is from Mary on Facebook. And Mary wrote in and said, did you ever think about just telling your mom you didn't like those sports? Well, interesting, Mary. And you know what? No, I don't think I ever thought of that. Because like I say in this chapter, you know, I wasn't comfortable with the way I felt. So, you know, I was trying to be, you know, I was trying to be good at sports. You know, in my internal monologue of everything was, yeah, fuck this, I hate this. But I didn't want to let people down. It was disappointing when I didn't score a basket. It was disappointing when I was flailing around like a girl. And I could feel that, you know, I could feel as a intuitive kid or whatever I was, I could definitely feel the disappointment in the way that I was. So, long story short, no, I never would have told her, hey, I don't like these sports, because I was on a mission to, you know, prove everyone wrong that I wasn't girly, that I could be a boy, and blah, 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 all that Pinocchio bullshit. So thank you, Mary. Great question. Oh, and also, you know, as I've always said, feel free to send in your stories, you guys. Send them in on Facebook. I got a great message from Lauren on Facebook. She shared a little story. I'm going to read it real quick. Lauren wrote into the show and said, hi, Tommy. Just wanted to write and say that I was happy to hear your conclusion of Fat Matt Episode 7 and that his crappiness helped you become a better person. I, too, grew up with a number of sarcastic a-hole boyfriends from my mom's poor taste in men and wicked, also fat, stepmother, Mary. Fat Mary, if you will. 5'2", 200-ish pounds with fried bleach blonde hair and always perfectly manicured nails. Mary wasn't intentionally evil. She just had high life goals of marrying my dad for his money and then spending her life at home raising children, watching Sesame Street, soap operas. Occasionally, she worked with teens at the community pool as a very round lifeguard. Oh, she was also bipolar with seasonal depression, so that was fun. She once got kicked out of a biker bar for rowdy behavior. She pushed her ex-husband down the stairs and threw a cooking pan at my father's face. I'm not laughing, but I am. He still has the chipped tooth to prove it. The list goes on. Nothing she did was ever her fault. She was always the victim, and it ended in a nasty divorce. Drama ensued for years after that. Point being, yes, you are not alone. Thank you for sharing. Aw, thank you, Lauren, for sharing that story. I love that. Fat Mary. Yes, please, if you have a Fat Mary, a fat step-parent, or anything you want to share, send it into our Facebook page at Thomas Anonymous. All right, that does it for today. Thank you so much for listening. Since we are in a crazy month of busy schedules, we will be back in 2 weeks with the Thomas Anonymous Christmas Hanukkah Holiday Extravaganza. We'll have some great guests and fun stuff happening, so you won't want to miss that. If you want to keep up with me calling Donald Trump fat every single day, I'm committed, follow me on Twitter at Tommy Natoli. That's TommyNatoli. You can also follow me on Instagram at Tommy_Natoli. If you want to share something with the show, like I said, send us a message on Facebook at Thomas Anonymous Podcast. I want to give a special shout out and thank you to bensound.com and Majestic Color Craves by my side for providing the music you hear in the show. All right, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Okay, bye.